ॐ युनतमनन्दस्य दिनादिनशलकय चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनुविष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले स्वयमुपगदामायां ददति सापनन्दिकम् वंशकोपतिभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Going, returning to the beginning of the meeting, the beginning meeting of Jadbharat and Maharaj Rahugana, Maharaj Rahugana with Jadbharat. Jadbharat had criticized very pointedly the attitude and the words of the king. We'll start with the words of the king. That the king had said, you know, oh, you've been very sarcastically, oh, you're so tired, that's why you're not walking properly and causing me so much difficulty, because you've been carrying the chariot, the palanquin, for so long, you must be so tired. When actually Jadbharat had just begun carrying the palanquin. He had just been impressed into the service of the king as a palanquin driver. You're so skinny and therefore you're not able to carry it properly. And actually Jadbharat was very stout and strong. So he then threatened to punish Jadbharat by beating him. You're a madman. You won't act properly. Will beat you and force you to act properly. This will be for your own good. So Jadbharat's first words in response were very, very strong too. He said, yes, you're exactly right. You say I must be fatigued, but actually you were saying I'm not fatigued. And actually it's a fact, because the soul can never be fatigued. The body may be tired, the soul may be, but can never be tired. The soul is eternal. It's spiritual. It never dies. It never becomes tired. It never becomes burned. It never becomes dried. Regardless of the bodily condition, there's no connection actually between the condition of the soul and the condition of the body at all. They never mix. So he spoke like this, and then Maharaj Rahugana responded by falling down at the feet of Jadbharat and saying, now I understand I've committed a great offense to a great realized soul, because you're speaking on such a high exalted level. And at least Maharaj Rahugana had the sense or the depth of spiritual realization to understand true spiritual truth when he heard it spoken by Jadbharat. So he had that very, very, very clearly. So he said, please forgive me, but yet I really can't understand the words that you're saying. You're saying that no one is master, no one is servant. You're saying that, so how can I do my duty as a king? And my duty as the king is to help people, to make sure they perform their prescribed duties, and thereby they'll be purified. You say there's no connection between the soul and the body, the internal and the external. And yet my duties as a king is directly dependent upon engaging people in external things, in their physical duties, and by engaging in their physical duties, they're purified and therefore their soul benefits. So and clearly also, clearly we can see how I'm the person, I may not be my body, but when I work very, very, very hard, who feels tired? It's me. The body itself doesn't feel tired. So therefore it's very hard for me to understand your instructions. So Jadbharat, and then he asked him several more questions too. The first question he actually asked him was, what is the ultimate shelter for everyone? Because this is what we're looking for. What is the principle? If I can have one principle that I can apply in all circumstances, because after all, what was the king's situation? He had taken the principle that I'm a king, and this is my duty, and that the people are my subjects, and I'm applying that, and now I'm getting chastised very strongly for that. And yet it's my duty, and where do these duties come from? The duty comes from the Vedas, from the Shastra, so I'm following Shastra, and yet I'm getting chastised by a great sage for doing my duty, for following the Shastra. So there must be some principle that I'm accepting it's not universally applicable. So I'm taking shelter, and we do this all the time. We take shelter of a principle or an ideal. The purpose of life is to do this, and the purpose of life is to gain that and achieve this, become strong or something. We take shelter of a principle, but yet that principle is not universally, continuously, always applicable. So therefore we take that principle and we try to apply it somewhere and it doesn't serve us properly, it falls apart. So he asked Jadbharat Maharaj, what, I want to know a principle. What is this most secure principle? Secure means I'll be able to take shelter of that in every circumstance. That was actually the first thing he asked him. What is the most secure shelter in this world? And the word for the most secure shelter is aranam. Aranam, the most secure shelter. So he asks, what is that most secure shelter? And then right after that, he asks, well, how can I make advancement? How can I advance in spiritual life? In text 20, in text 19, in chapter 10, what is the most secure shelter? What is that I can always take shelter of? And then how can I advance? Meaning, how can I advance towards that? Because clearly I'm taking shelter of something different now because you're chastising me. I'm acting on one level, but you're chastising me, so, and you're the most exalted soul, so what is the secure principle and how can I advance towards it? And then he says, then he goes into the questions, I'm not fatigued from labor, I can't understand what you mean by that. Clearly I feel fatigued, I'm the soul, I'm not my body, the body is, but I'm the one who feels fatigued. What is the connection? So he asks, please explain this more. What do you mean? So in the chapter that we heard yesterday, Jadbharat's first response, he says that actually there's no connection at all between the soul and the body. None at all. But what we're experiencing as that connection is something to do with the mind. The mind, we invest our self, we identify, we use the term in Krishna Kanda, we identify with the mind, and the mind is affected by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. So according to the desires that sit in that mind, in each living entity is covered by a mind that has a different infection of the modes, different combination of the modes of material nature. So based on that, there are different desires sitting in the mind. And based on that, we get a field of activities, which is the combination of those desires interacting with the 10 senses, 5 knowledge acquiring and 5 active senses, with the mind and the elements of the material world. And when the sense objects combine with all this, we get hundreds of thousands of desires, and this is what's all sitting in our subtle body, and we're identifying with that mind, which is really no different from our false ego, a false sense of who I am. And this is causing us to take body after body after body after body in the material world. It's all sitting in the mind. And we identify with that even though we have nothing to do with it. And therefore our identification with the body is fixed. Actually, that is the chetra, that is the field of our activities at this point. This whole vast field, which springs from the soul's misidentification with the mind and all that entails. But actually, we are not that field of activities. We are the chetragya. We're actually the knower of the field, and yet there is another chetragya, the super soul, Krishna, who is in everyone's heart, who knows all fields of activity. So this is how Jad Bharat responded. So the king, when he heard this, all this instruction that we have to purify the mind and stop this identification based on the sense of enjoyment, false identification. So here's the king began to respond in this way in the first verse of chapter 12. O most exalted personality, you are not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because you are Shakshat Hari, you are giving the message of the Lord. By the influence of your true self, all kinds of contradictions in the Shastras have been removed. You're explaining everything. Because the Shastras say one thing in one place and another thing in another place. So you are explaining it in a consistent manner. In the dress of a friend of a Brahmana, you look as if you're the son of a Brahmana, but you're in that dress. Externally, you look like one in a Brahmana family. You are hiding your transcendentally blissful position. I offer my respectful obeisances to you. How could anyone tell just by looking at you, looking almost like a madman wearing a Brahman thread? How could anyone understand who you really are and what the depth of your realization is? Oh, best of the Brahmanas, my body is filled with dirty things, and my vision has been bitten by the serpent of pride. Why? He was thinking he was the king. Due to my material conceptions, I am diseased. Interesting to think of our pride as a serpent, the poison of the serpent of pride infects us, and it's going to, what happens when one gets bitten by a poisonous serpent? He dies. So pride will actually kill us. And due to my material conceptions, I am diseased. And what will that disease cause due to the material conception? But what is a disease cause?
Suffering.
And what is the disease? What is the worst thing that can happen to you if you have a disease?
Die.
You die from it. So our disease is our material conception, our identification with the body, the concept of ourself as our body, and that is what causes our death. We don't die, but due to the identification with the body, we experience death. So that's the cause of this infection of disease, and your nectarian instructions are the proper medicine, the oshud, for one suffering from such a fever. Well, your instructions will cure the disease. What is the disease? Yeah, the material conception of who I am. So your instructions will cure, are the medicine that will cure the disease. For one suffering from such a fever, and they are the cooling waters for one scorched by the heat. So the material conception causes us to be scorched by the heat, meaning the pain of material life. So many ways to describe the pain of material life. There's the fourfold miseries and the threefold miseries and the six. So many ways to describe the pain of material life. So pain is like the, so either the snake bite, when one is bitten by a snake, it causes a great burning type of pain. That's what the poison causes. So the cooling waters by one scorched from the heat and the fever of the disease of material conception, both are cooled by the cooling waters of the medicine of Chatbharat's words. He continues. So he's explaining how to approach a spiritual master. Whatever doubts I have about a particular subject matter, I shall ask you about later. For the time being, these mysterious yoga instructions you have given me for self-realization appear very difficult to understand. So he's saying, I still don't understand. You've said that I have nothing to do with the body, but look, what I experience, this is so far from my experience, and I can't understand it with my intelligence either. So please repeat them in a simple way so that I can understand them. My mind is very inquisitive and I want to understand this clearly. He wants to deeply understand. That means he wants to realize it. Why? Because if we realize something, we will act on it. So he wants to be free from illusion. So Prabhupada explains in his purport to three, approaching a spiritual master to get free from illusion. The Vedic literature instructs, Tasmad gurun prapadyeta jigyaso sreya uttama. An intelligent man must be very inquisitive to know the transcendental science deeply. Therefore, one must approach a guru, a spiritual master. Although Jadbharat explained everything to Maharaj Vahugana, it appears that his intelligence was not perfect enough to understand clearly. He therefore requested a further explanation. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Tadbidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. The student must approach a spiritual master and surrender unto him fully, pranipatena. He must also question him in order to understand his instructions, pariprasnena. One should not only surrender to the spiritual master, but also render loving service unto him, sevaya. So three things, surrender, questions, and service, so that the spiritual master will be pleased with the student and explain the transcendental subject matter more clearly. A challenging spirit before the spiritual master should be avoided if one is at all interested in learning the Vedic instructions in depth. So here is how to question. He's saying, I don't understand. I need your further instructions, which are like the cooling waters that will cool down the fever of my, and cure the fever of my material conception and misunderstandings. O master of yogic power, you said that the fatigue resulting from moving the body here and there is appreciated by direct perception, but actually there is no fatigue. So on one level, we experience fatigue directly, or we experience, we ourselves, the soul, experiences all the occurrences of the body. We directly experience that, but actually, there is no fatigue for the soul. It simply exists as a matter of formality. The word is formality, vyavahara mulam. So these words were used in some of the verses of Jadbharat in chapter 11, in the first verse. Vyavaharam. He said, you're speaking as if you are very experienced. When he first started instructing Jadbharat, he chastised him. We read that yesterday. You're speaking as if you are very learned, but actually you're just talking externally as a matter on the surface, etiquette. That's how Prabhupada calls it here. Just something on the superficial level. So you're saying what I said is superficial, but yet we experience it, and you say there's no fatigue. By such inquiries and answers, no one can come to the conclusions of the absolute truth. That was another tattva-vimarsana. By consulting others, one can't understand this. Just by talking about it, one can't understand. Now, how is it possible to understand? What is the process of understanding? You said my understanding is superficial, external, just sort of on the etiquette level, not deep, heartfelt, depth understanding. Just like if someone, etiquette in the sense of when, say if you meet someone on the street, and even if you hate them, you say, oh, how are you today? Oh, everything okay? And how's this and that? But actually, it's not depth of feeling that you're expressing. You're not expressing your heart to the person. This is just on a certain level, because this is the etiquette on how to deal with people on first meeting them. But if you see someone who you actually love so dearly, then your meeting will be very, very deep with them. So he's saying you've accused me, my understandings, of being superficial, and you said they can't be understood. I can't get a deep understanding just by discussing. Well, what do I do? From my level of understanding, it seems like the body gets fatigued and the soul feels the fatigue. That's my experience, and yet you say that's superficial, and I don't know how to understand it more deeply. So this really is leading to the original questions that he asked, of what is the real principle of spiritual life, and how do I advance towards that principle? How do I understand? So he's going to gradually explain this. So this chapter is not exactly technical, but it's technical nonetheless. Not philosophically technical, but it's technical. And here's Jadbharat's answer to that. So he's going to again explain the difference between the soul and the body. That's how he's going to start. And what is knowledge? Who we actually are, because he wants to show them that the soul and the body are completely different. So Jadbharat said, the self-realized Brahman Jadbharat said, amongst the various material combinations and permutations, permutation means changes, the changes of the material combinations. So there's the material combinations and the permutations means the changes of them. So amongst these, there are various forms and earthly transformations. For some reason, these move on the surface of the earth. So our body is just a transformation of earth and water and some fire and air and ether. So some of these transformations of earth move on the earth and are called palanquin carriers. Those material transformations which do not move are gross material objects, like stones. In any case, the material body is made of earth. and stone in the form of feet, ankles, calves, knees, thighs, torso, because stone means the body, the bones are made out of calcium. So calcium is a rock-like substance. Throat and head. Upon the shoulders is the wooden palanquin. Some forms of earth are carrying another form of earth in the wooden of the palanquin. The palanquin carriers are carrying the palanquins. And within the palanquin is the so-called king of Silveria. The body of the king is simply another transformation of earth. But within that body, your lordship is situated and falsely thinking that you are the king of the state of Silveria. So here is one level of looking at everything that we see. They're just transformations of earth. Look, just material elements. So in that sense, there's a real oneness amongst everything. Another way to look at it is that we have a oneness, because if we consider ourselves the body, when we die, we go back into matter. We become the dust. The body turns again into dust. So we're no different from anything. There's a great oneness amongst all the material elements and ourselves. So we are the sky in that sense. We are the earth, the very earth. There are poets who write like this. And you are falsely thinking, who am I that I'm so special, I'm different, I'm not like one of you. I'm the king. But actually, in how many years? 5, 10, 20, 30, 50 years, you'll be dust. We'll all be dust. So what is this? You're the king. Next verse. It is a fact, however. So now he's going to turn it around. So he's saying there's a oneness on that sense. It is a fact, however. So then you're talking about suffering. And this is interesting how he turns it around. So he said, in one level, there's no suffering because we're not the body. But on another level, it is a fact, however, that these innocent people carrying your palanquin without payment are certainly suffering due to this injustice. You're forcing them to carry your palanquin and you're not giving them anything in return as work. You're making them your slaves and you're forcing them to suffer. So on one hand you're saying there's no suffering, or you're saying that you don't experience suffering, but look and see, you're causing suffering to these people. Their condition is very lamentable because you're forcibly engaged them in carrying your palanquin. This proves that you are cruel and unkind, because the king had said, it is my, because I'm the king, I'm very kindly forcing the people to follow the principles, and therefore I'm helping them and purifying them. But he's saying, no, in your illusion, you're thinking you are helping these people, but actually you're causing them greatest suffering. You're making them your slaves. This proves that you are cruel and unkind. You're saying that you're kind, the kind king, but you're actually cruel and unkind. Yet due to false prestige, you were thinking you were protecting the citizens. This is from one of the verses in chapter 10. This is ludicrous. And you were such a fool that you could not have been adored as a great man in an assembly of persons advanced in knowledge. So he's ripping apart all the conceptions that the king has. Because they're false, they're not secure principles. They're not secure shelters. They're not secure conceptions, way to view reality that will be true at every instance of our existence. So he's ripping them apart. First, you think you're the king. You're just earth like everyone else. second. You think you're so, you're, as a king, you're being so kind to everyone, but actually, you look at it from this point of view, and you're just being so cruel, you're exploiting these people. Kind king. You should hear what the citizens are saying. It's continuing. All of us on the surface of the globe are living entities in different forms. Some of us are moving and some not moving. All of us come into existence. So he's continuing this point about like the earth. We come into existence, we remain for some time and are annihilated when the body is again mingled with the earth. We are all simply different transformations of the earth. Different bodies and capacities are simply transformations of the earth that exist in name only. For everything grows out of the earth, and when everything is annihilated, it again mingles with the earth. In other words, we are but dust, and we shall but be dust. Everyone can consider this point. So what is it that we have to be so proud of? He's removing his pride, because the king said to him, my pride is my disease. Our pride is all our diseases. I've been bitten by the serpent of pride. My vision has been bitten. So we have to remove the pride of thinking, oh, I am so special, I'm expert in this, I have this talent, this ability, I'm so much better than this one. This is all just earth, different combinations of the elements. And then, in so many years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years at most, probably for all of us, 70 years maybe, 80 years at most, everyone will, all those talents and abilities be transformed back into the material elements, earth again. So what, again, is the shelter? It's not me. Is it the earth that's the shelter then? Because this is the principle, we're all coming from earth. So one can say, yes, it must be the earth that's the shelter, so I'll take shelter of the earth. This is the great principle that everything is, there's a oneness in that everything is matter. And there are philosophers who speak like this. Poets mostly, probably. Or actually the material, that's actually what the word materialist means. When there was a German philosopher named Feuerbach who coined the, you've heard of him? Yeah. He was actually the original Marxist. The philosophy came from there. Because he was the original materialist, philosophical materialist in the 1850s. So he used the term materialist, but he, like we say, oh, he's a materialist. And we use it in a condescending way, a critical way, pejorative. But he didn't. He said, well, basically, is I believe that all that exists is what I can see. And that's what he meant by material. I'm a materialist. This is what I see. This is what exists. We don't need any mystical understandings of anything. I believe what I see. This is a philosophical foundation of modern science. So there's a oneness in that, being a materialist, because what you see is matter. This is what exists. So now Jed Barat is going to take it a step further, though. One may say that varieties arise from the planet Earth itself, so that's the oneness of everything, the principle. However, although the universe may temporarily appear to be truth, it ultimately has no real existence. The earth was originally created by a combination of atomic particles. So there's something more primal, more basic principle than the earth even. There's the particles that the earth is composed of. But these particles are also impermanent. They're not eternal. In other words, there's the particles, but they're composed of something else, and they also change. We want a principle that is going to be true in every circumstance, that never changes. And that is security for us. So he's going for that. Actually, so these particles are impermanent. So if you get used to saying this is the truth, then these particles break down. And there's something more basic than that. Actually, the atom is not the cause of the universe, although some philosophers think so. It is not a fact that the varieties found in the material world simply result from atomic juxtaposition or combination. So there's something more primal to that. Since this universe has no ultimate existence, because you can break it down, we want a principle. Existence means something that's non-changing. That's what everyone is looking for, really. That's kind of security. So the things within it, since the universe is always changing, and the atoms are changing, and that which the atom compose the atoms are changing. So since the universe has no ultimate existence, the things within it, shortness, difference, grossness, skinniness, smallness, bigness, results, cause, living symptoms, and materials, they're all imagined. We're all seeing what we consider reality is just our mind's projection. And different people in different cultures see completely differently because their conceptions are different. They think differently. So we think that the reality, what we're seeing is this, but we're actually just seeing our minds. So all this is imagined, the living symptoms, the cause, the results, bigness, smallness, skinniness, grossness. They're all pots made of the same substance, earth, but they are named differently. The differences are characterized by the substance, nature, predisposition, time, and activity. You should know that all these are simply mechanical manifestations created by material nature. So in other words, all things created in the material world are temporary and are unreal. They are temporary manifestations mechanically caused by matter, which in itself is formless. That's what he's saying here. So then again, what is that most secure shelter? If everything that we see is changing around us, where is our security going to come from? So that's what he had asked about. And of course, now he's going to explain on the positive, what is that ultimate truth? What then, text 11, what then is the ultimate truth? What is that secure shelter? The answer is, the non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth. This is called Advaita Gyan. This has been explained right in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Vedanti tat tattva vedat tattva myaj gyanam adhyam. Prameti parameti bhagavaneti sabjate. The answer is that the non-dual knowledge, that knowledge that unifies everything, that vision that a possessor of the knowledge has that unifies everything, that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth. It is devoid of the contamination of material qualities. It gives us liberation. If we have this vision, there's no death for the body, because the body is not us. If we have this vision, we get liberated because we're free from the material qualities, the modes of material nature, which bind us to limited vision. It is one without a second. It is all-pervading. It is beyond imagination. The first realization of that knowledge is Brahman, then Paramatma, the Supersoul. Then Paramatma, the super soul, is realized by the yogis who try to see him without grievance. He who is without grievance, who is peaceful, Prashanta. That is the second stage of realization. So this all-pervading universal knowledge, greater than universal knowledge, the absolute truth, is understood in three different ways. As Brahman, Paramatma, and now he's going to explain. Finally, full realization of the same supreme knowledge is realized as the supreme person. All learned scholars describe the supreme person as Vasudev, the cause of Brahman, Paramatma, and others. So this is the secure principle, that if we understand that it is Vasudeva Savamiti, our Prabhupada, we'll read from there in the purport, Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatma Sadolabha. The wise man can understand that ultimately Vasudev, Krishna, is the cause of Brahman and Paramatma, the super soul. Thus Vasudev is Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. So he is the cause of the earth is the cause of all the bodies, and the atoms are the cause of the earth, and he is the cause of the atoms, of everything in existence, Sarva Karana Karanam. So this absolute truth can be realized in one of three ways. Is Brahman, all-pervadingness, Paramatma, personalized all-pervadingness, and ultimately is Bhagavan, the supreme person who everything else is coming from. This is confirmed in the Bhagavatam. The real tattva, absolute truth, is Bhagavan. But due to incomplete realization of the absolute truth, people sometimes describe the same Vishnu is impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma. Vedanti tat tatva vedas tatvam yas jnanam adyam prameti paramatmeti Bhagavan iti sabyate. Imagine you have a palanquin driver and he starts speaking to you like this. With power too, potency, that it pierces your heart and you realize that you just don't know anything. Shocking. From the very beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Satyam Param Dhimahi, we meditate on the Supreme Truth. The Supreme Truth is explained here as Jnanam Vishuddham Satyam. The Absolute Truth is devoid of material contamination, Vishuddham, and is transcendental to the material qualities. It gives all spiritual success and liberation from the material world. That Absolute Truth is Krishna, Vasudeva. So what is the secure principle that is everywhere in all circumstances? This is it. It is Bhagavan. It is Krishna. It is Vasudev. Jnanam Vishuddham Vasudevam Savitam Sabditam. Now then the next question he asked was how to make advancement towards that understanding, that realization. If one has grasped the absolute truth, then there's no fear of death, there's no change for him. He doesn't die, because the same truth that he understands in life is there for him in death. The same truth that he understands when he's poor is there for him when he's rich. The same truth that he understands when he's healthy is there for him when he's sick. This is the meaning of grasping the absolute truth. It's with us continuously. It won't fall apart. So he says, that is Bhagavan. That means that is that everything, there's nothing that exists separate from Bhagavan, from Krishna. Nothing. No situation. Everything is Krishna, Krishna's arrangement. And surrendering to that makes us free, liberated. With great devotion makes us a devotee. With great loving devotion, understanding it's Krishna, makes us a pure devotee. Being desiring to be instrumental to Krishna makes us a pure devotee with great love. So now how to advance towards this? He's explained what the absolute truth is. Now how to advance? my dear King Rahugana, unless one has the opportunity to smear his entire body with the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees, one cannot realize the absolute truth. Vina Mahatpada Rajo Bhishekam. One cannot realize the absolute truth simply by observing celibacy, brahmacharya, strictly following the rules and regulations of householder life, leaving home as a vanaprastha, accepting sannyas, or undergoing severe penance in winter by keeping oneself submerged in water, or surrounding oneself in summer by fire and in the scorching heat by the sun. There are many processes to understand the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is only revealed to one who has attained the mercy of a great devotee. So that is how to obtain Bhagavan realization. Prabhupada's purport. Actual knowledge of transcendental bliss can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee. Vedeshu dolabham madolabham matma bhaktau. One cannot attain the perfection of spiritual life simply by following the directions of the Vedas. One has to approach a pure devotee. Anya bilasita sanyam genakamana vrita. By the grace of such a devotee, one can understand the absolute truth, Krishna, and one's relationship with him. A materialistic person sometimes thinks that simply by executing pious activities and remaining at home, one can understand the absolute truth. That is denied in this verse. So there's one process of understanding. Mercy of an exalted Vaishnava. No one can understand the absolute truth. There are so many religious processes that can help one advance, but this is the only way to come to the topmost position. No one can understand the absolute truth by simply observing the rules and regulations of brahmacharya, celibacy. One has to serve the pure devotee. That will help one understand the absolute truth without fail. 13. Now, how do you recognize who is a devotee? How to recognize the pure devotees? Who are the pure devotees? Jad Bharat says, who are the pure devotees mentioned here? In an assembly of pure devotees, there is no question of discussing material subjects like politics and sociology. In an assembly of pure devotees, there is a discussion only of the qualities, forms, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is praised and worshipped with full attention in the association of pure devotees. By constantly hearing such topics respectfully, even a person who wants to merge into the existence of the absolute truth abandons this idea and gradually becomes attached to the service of Vasudev. Purport. The symptoms of pure devotees are described in this verse. The pure devotee is never interested in material topics. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has strictly prohibited his devotees to talk about worldly matters. Gramya vartana kahibe. One should not indulge in talking unnecessarily about news of the material world. One should not waste time in this way. This is a very important feature in the life of a devotee. A devotee has no other ambition than to serve Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Krishna consciousness movement was started to engage people 24 hours daily in the service of the Lord and in His glorification. The students in this institution engage in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness from 5 in the morning to 10 at night. They actually have no opportunity to waste their time unnecessarily by discussing politics, sociology, and current events. These will go their own way. A devotee is concerned only with serving Krishna positively and seriously. And then also, so he's described how to make advancement. What is that shelter, the secure shelter, how to advance towards it? And then at the end of chapter 10, when he was questioning him, he said, the king asked him, what is your history? How did you come to learn this? You know, how did you He asked who you are, where do you come from, etc. like that. Now Jad Bharat is going to explain his story to Rahugana. In a previous birth, I was known as Maharaj Bharat. That's in 16 of chapter 10. He had asked him, "O Brahmani, you appear to be moving in this world very much covered and unknown to others. Who are you? Are you a learned Brahmin and a saintly person? I see you're wearing a sacred thread like this. Whose disciple are you? Where do you live? Why did you come to this place? What is your mission?" He asked him like that. "In a previous birth, I was known as Maharaj Bharat. I attained perfection by becoming completely detached from material activities. Through direct experience and through indirect experience, I received understanding from the Vedas. I was fully engaged in the service of the Lord, but due to my misfortune, I became very affectionate to a small deer. So much so that I neglected my spiritual duties. Due to my deep affection for the deer in my next life, I had to accept the body of a deer." I'm going to read that purport. And then there's two more verses which we'll complete, and that will complete the chapter. Prabhupada explains in his purport, "The incident herein described is very significant. In a previous verse it is stated, Vina mahatpado rajobhishekam. One cannot attain perfection without smearing the dust from the lotus feet of an exalted devotee on his head. If one always follows the order of the spiritual master, there's no question of falling down. As soon as a foolish disciple tries to overtake his spiritual master and becomes ambitious to occupy his post, he immediately falls down. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati katopi. If the spiritual master is considered an ordinary man, the disciple surely loses his chance to advance further. Despite a very rigid life and devotional service, Bharat Maharaj did not consult the spiritual master when he became overly attached to a deer. Consequently, he became strongly attached to the deer, and forgetting his spiritual routine, he fell down." So herein, Prabhupada describes the cause of Maharaj Bharat's fall down. On one level it's the deer, on the other level it's that he did not follow the instructions or consult his spiritual master, and therefore he became entangled in this way. "My dear heroic king," Jad Bharat continues, "due to my past sincere service to the Lord, I could remember everything of my past life, even while in the body of a deer. Because I am aware of the fall down in my past life, I always keep myself separate from the association of ordinary men. Being afraid of the bad materialistic association, I wander alone, unnoticed by others." Simply, in the final verse, "simply by associating with exalted devotees, anyone can attain perfection of knowledge, and with the sword of knowledge can cut to pieces the illusory associations within this material world. Through the association of devotees, one can engage in the service of the Lord by hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam. Thus, one can revive his dormant Krishna consciousness, and sticking to the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, return home, back to Godhead, even in this life." Prabhupada's purport, short purport. "To become liberated from material bondage, one must give up the association of worldly people and accept the association of devotees. Positive and negative processes are mentioned in this regard. You have to do this and you can't do that. Through the association of devotees, one develops Krishna consciousness, which is dormant within. This Krishna consciousness movement is giving this chance to everyone. We are giving shelter to everyone who is serious about progressing in Krishna consciousness. We arrange for their lodging and board so that they can peacefully cultivate Krishna consciousness and return home back to Godhead, even in this life.
Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Conversation Between Maharaj Rahugana and Jadbharat. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Jadbharat ki jai, Maharaj Rahugana ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, it's a little late, so no time for questions, so we'll continue tomorrow. When does Maharaj come?
After
Janmashtami, sometime.
You have to call him again and find out the details.
It depends when Dayasara will allow him to come. Yes? But so he'll be here after Janmashtami. And also, so next Janmashtami is on Wednesday. So we won't have class on Wednesday. Thursday, and probably Friday as well. And then we'll see if Maharaj is here next week, then he'll give class. And then on the Sunday after that, I'll go to, if Krishna allows, I'll go to Vrindavan.